The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
4 wins from 4 and the only perfect record in the Premier League. A pretty good situation for Manchester City going into the international break, but it's not exactly been plain sailing to get to that point. Look at the result against Fulham and it looks like a comfortable afternoon. But ask anyone just before half-time and there will have been more than a couple of butterflies in more than a couple of tummies. Welcome to today's Blue Moon podcast, where we'll pick apart the talking points from Saturday's 5-1 win with some inevitable discussion around VAR given City's second goal. Still, you win some, lose some. Also on today's show, we'll take a look over the business done in the transfer window now that the squad is locked in until January at the very least. Were you happy with the deals done, or is the team a little light given injuries at the moment? We'll get into all of that in a bit. I'm David Mooney, and with me this week is City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Hello there.
And The Athletic's Mark Critchley.
Hi guys, how are we doing?
Not too bad, thanks Mark, not too bad. Chris, you well?
Yeah, good Tar, good.
Good, good. It's one of the hottest days of the year so far, despite it being September. So I thought we'd work in the drinks break at some point. So if you need a drink at any point, just let the ref know and we'll get you sorted out.
Is it too soon to ask for one now?
I mean, you could go now if you want.
Can we get a toilet break at some point as well with the drinks break?
I don't know about that. Okay. I don't know what the Premier League rules allow for that. So have to turn up late and you come back on the
Eric
pitch.
Eric Dier ran off the pitch that time and then ran back on, which I think was related to natural causes, shall we say.
So, that might have been against City, was it?
I've got
a feeling that was at the Etihad. I might be making that up. So
I think it was at Tottenham, but I don't know. Yeah, as a player, ever had to take a leak during a City game? Maybe one for readers' questions next week. Maybe. Yeah.
Gary Lineker famously.
Let's not.
Yeah. What? Okay. Too much. Treading the path you'd already opened the door to.
Yeah. Balotelli arrived late to a second half once because he was in the loo, didn't he? I think. So I think maybe not an uncommon occurrence. I don't know. No. We'll find out. We'll just have to let you two wet yourself on the show and see what happens. That wasn't how I expected today to start. So let's talk about the normal stuff. For the 2023-24 season, the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport venues are showing every televised City fixture over the 23-24 season. So instead of turning to the internet for a dodgy stream, get your mates together and get down to your local Green King pub and get closer to the action. Green King Sport have just recently launched the Green King Sport Instagram page too. That'll become a home to fan content, deals and competitions throughout the season. Drop them a follow and you won't just be the first to know about all of this. You'll be helping out the Blue Moon podcast as well. Chris, let's get into the Fulham game and the kind of general picture after it to start with. Because as I said in the introduction, City now the only team with a 100% record. Wasn't easy at times though, was it?
Well, it wasn't. No, I thought you meant the season as a whole into the start. But
well, I mean, the season as a whole hasn't been either, really.
It's been pretty good. I was never really concerned against Fulham. I have to be honest. I don't want to.
All right. Well, you pissed all over my editorial line.
Well, yeah. I don't want to piss all over your editorial too much without even asking for a break in which to do so. But like, I don't know. I just had this feeling of it's Fulham. We'll be all right. I mean, even the last time we played them, it was very tight due to Cancelo getting sent off. And we could see the penalty. It was 1-1, 10 men. for about an hour or something. We still managed to do it. I don't know, maybe it's born of I'm just, you know, relaxing on a pile of trophies with my hands behind my head thinking, yeah, whatever, bring it on, we'll be fine. I don't know, but I never really had that feeling of abject jeopardy against Fulham, despite it being quite tight at half time.
Yeah. Mark, so Chris wasn't that stressed about it. I thought the performance in the first half, not going to lie, pretty bad. And I thought to get in at halftime, and we'll talk about the decision that allowed them to get in at halftime ahead, but I thought like whether or not that was a dodgy VAR call or not, it was quite fortuitous that they were in front at the break.
Yeah, I know. I totally get what you mean. I think just the level of control that we're used to seeing really wasn't there, I don't think. Whether you put that down to Guardiola's absence. When the whole news about the surgery came out, and I remember doing a couple of podcasts and people asking, is this going to affect them? And like the answer is just like, default answer is no, right? Default answer is that it's been 6 or 7 years and it's such a team based around a system, around principles, around things that get drilled into until they're so repetitive that, you know, if he's lying on painkillers for 2 weeks in a hospital somewhere, it's not going to make a big deal. But I think actually maybe, you know, and a few of the players spoke about this after the game as well, I think it does have an effect. You know, you perhaps aren't always in that same rhythm. And it just was a very un-Guardiola performance, I thought, that first half, just in terms of how quickly they were trying to get the ball forward, how often they were looking for Haaland, and the amount of stray passes. I mean, some of the, like, Kovacic, who I think has been, you know, really impressive to start with, just the amount of balls he was losing, the ones that Walker was looking to play and wasn't pulling off. I actually watched it back this morning because I didn't get to watch the game live on Saturday. I watched it back this morning on 2x speed. So if you thought they were playing quickly in that first half, imagine what I thought this morning. But yeah, and then second half though, like on 2x speed, it actually looked like a normal City game.
Yeah, so, it's back to normal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Or a normal football match, you know, rather than on Quaaludes or whatever. But yeah, like I thought, yeah, it's, you know, they were playing a lot of long balls forward, trying to get in behind Fulham too quickly, and that actually just led to Fulham had a lot of possession, I thought, for a team at the Etihad. They had quite a decent amount of possession that first half, and were building and constructing, not really creating a lot, but still tying things together quite nicely. So yeah, but then look, you had the first half, but there was a clear change after the half time, I think, and City just took control from there.
Yeah. Chris, I want you to have a listen to this. This is Kyle Walker speaking after the game in the mix zone. And he said something, it's a little clip, but he said something quite interesting.
It was important to get off to a good start. I think we're always playing catch up, and I said that at the start of the season, and, you know, when I spoke to the lads, that why don't we try and run away with it like we did, you know, the 2017-18 season, rather than playing catch up or waiting for people to drop points.
And you'd look at City's titles recently, you know, Arsenal last season, Liverpool, yeah, they built up a little bit of a head of steam over Liverpool a couple of years ago, but Liverpool came back into it. There is almost like that attitude where, given the start of the season that City have had, there is possibly an opportunity here to really put the league under some pressure by putting a run of wins together to begin with.
Well, yeah, but it's one of those where you kind of take it for granted that should be there. I suppose it's a bit like Pep in a way. You take it for granted that even though he's not there, the things that are in place dictate that you will play how you always play, so you should play well. You should take it for granted that, I mean, it shouldn't be a revelatory thought, should it? Let's win most of our games early in the season.
When
we'll be in a really good position to win the league. So sometimes it's just good to have that sort of tangible target, like overtly stated, isn't it? To have it as something to aim for rather than, we are all thinking this, right? I'm thinking it. Is he thinking it? Are you thinking what we're thinking? Do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, it's good to have it out there. It was a bit tight, wasn't it? We can't keep playing catch up like we have been doing and expecting to get away with it. So fair play to Walker for putting it out there, and let's hope they latch on. But you'd hope that they were on that kind of trajectory anyway, thought wise.
Yeah. Mark, the other thing that Walker said in that interview, and I guess it kind of speaks to keeping the squad fresh, and we'll come into the transfer window a bit later on. But he said that he sits next to Guardiola in the changing rooms, and he's not won the Premier League, so he wants to win it for him this year. And it's that kind of it's almost like the idea of there being complacency after three titles in a row, it just isn't there, is it?
Yeah, well, I think that has always been a huge thing each and every season, hasn't it? Just within the dynamic, within the dressing room, within the squad, Guardiola has absolutely insisted that that hunger's there. It was the whole Happy Flowers thing, middle of last season. And look, I think it's almost natural that when you have a season like last season, that perhaps some players begin to consider their options, think, have I essentially achieved all that I can here? I said this line on another podcast, but there's that Sid Waddell line about Alexander the Great crying salt tears for there were no more worlds left to conquer, you know? They've achieved so much. Yeah. I'm shamelessly ripping it off for a second podcast in a row. But they've achieved so much that you almost expect that little hunger not to be there, maybe, for some players. And I think you saw that borne out in a lot of the conversations that were had over the summer over different players' futures, Walker included. But, it's interesting that he's mentioned Guardiola there, because it is also perhaps a little factor that he actually wants it to win for other players who haven't in the squad yet. And we can all see that City have gone through something a bit more of a rebuild than we're actually used to most seasons this year, and so perhaps that's playing on some of the more experienced, more senior players' minds as well, that they want to do it for their new teammates.
Yeah, Sid Waddell, by the way, does have a little stake in football. Do you know the TV series that he wrote?
I did know he was a TV writer, but I don't know which TV show you're referring to. So yeah, please.
He wrote the kids' TV series Jossie's Giants.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Whoa!
No way!
What a classic!
Yeah.
So did he write the lyrics to the theme tune?
I don't know.
That was a cracker.
I don't know, I'm afraid, but Sid Waddell authored Jossie's Giants. There you go. Learn something new every day. Let's talk about the change after half time, Chris, in that Fulham game, because if the first half showed in many ways the value of players that can hold the ball in the front three, because City were just not keeping possession at the top end, the second half showed what happens when they do keep possession, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a real mentality shift. I don't know if we are aware of whether Pep is on a big screen or, you know, we've got a little R2 unit projecting a hologram of him into the middle of the dressing room.
help me, Pep Guardiola. You're my only hope.
Exactly, yeah. But sometimes you do need that half-time talking to, don't you, just to reset. And, it was a tangible difference, one which I think we all expected and hoped for. And it was really, really comfortable in the end.
Yeah, the change of shape, Mark, by switching Doku over to the left, Foden then goes into the middle and Walker provides the width on the right-hand side. I was surprised that City didn't do that earlier, because I've really liked that kind of setup this season. I think it gives them the opportunity to strangle opposition. And I think that's what City need at the moment when De Bruyne is injured, isn't it?
Yeah, I liked it as well when they did it against Newcastle. And I think it might be just a little bit, sometimes a bit opponent dependent. I think it really, you know, against Newcastle, it really helped almost like expose Dan Burn there and his perhaps lack of mobility and lack of pace. And if you've got Walker covering that whole side, you can, with his pace, you can afford to do that. So I think it worked for the Newcastle game. On, you know, Saturday, Fulham, I think they didn't have Paulinho, did they? And I think he's so important to them in terms of what they do defensively and out of possession that you can afford to take a few more risks, a few more liberties. I like that, because I think Foden, obviously everyone's wanted Foden playing in the middle for so long, but him moving off that right and into the middle, and then he was taking up more positions actually centrally as well, I think, towards the end of the first half. I think City just look more threatening when they play that way. Yeah. And like I say, I don't think it's one that suits every single opponent, but against the right opponent, yeah, it's one way, like you say, of getting that creativity that everyone's talking about in De Bruyne's absence, yeah.
Yeah, it's the Foden in the middle thing, isn't it, Chris? That's like in De Bruyne's absence, that's just where you want to see him play.
Definitely, and it's often key injuries that allow players that are waiting in the wings to flourish. So he's, you know, everyone's been clamouring for him to be played in that role, not least himself, I would think, and he's just a joy to watch. Especially when he's getting more of the ball and he can be more direct and take, you know, draw players out from the middle and get those passes and runs inside going. Yeah, it's what we all want.
Yeah. Do you get any more excitement from watching him in the centre or on the wing just because of the fact that, you know, he's come through the academy, he's a Stockport lad, all that sort of stuff? But the fact that he's kind of running games from the centre at the moment, does that make City a little bit more special for you?
Definitely. It's great to have a homegrown City fan, academy talent in the heart of the team, you know, literally in the middle of it. But don't get me wrong, if he's on the wing and playing brilliantly and seeing a lot of the ball, then I'm kind of happy with that. But yeah, more happy if he's in his preferred role, pulling the strings, because he's worked hard for it for a long time. He's definitely good enough and he deserves the opportunity to prove that.
Yeah, he's been patient, hasn't he, Mark?
He has. He's needed to be as well. And I think, like, I agree with what Chris says there. I think, look, every City fan wants to see a player that, you know, is idolised and held up in that image of being a local City lad, just fulfilling everything that he wants to be. And, you know, this is the position he wants to play. I think Guardiola's always been pretty clear in the past about why he doesn't play there more often, and it's to do with that, what he does off the ball, basically, and that he's got more to learn from a defensive perspective there. And it's something that was reflected with England as well. I was at the World Cup covering England, and there was, if you remember after that, I think it was after the US game, everybody wanted Foden to start and to play centrally. And Southgate thought the same. He thought he just doesn't quite have it, like the nous off the ball to be able to play there. But I think this little system, with Walker covering up and down that right-hand side, you've got a lot of coverage there. You're not really going to be exposed. If Foden's there as well, he can chip in, but then drift into the middle. I think it just works. Yeah. So if this is the method for getting him into a more central position, then maybe it's something to explore further, absolutely.
Does that method work when De Bruyne is fit again, though? That's the question. Or is that just a can that needs kicking down the road for now?
Well, we can kick that down the road for like 4 or 5 months or whatever it is now. But I think, look, maybe not. I think when De Bruyne comes back, a lot's going to change, isn't it? Because then, look, Bernardo can play wide, Foden can play wide. You can put different combinations in the middle of players that we haven't really seen before because of Kovacic and Nunez's arrivals. So that is a bit of a variable that we're only really going to find out later in the season, but it isn't a problem for now. And the problem City have now really is like replacing De Bruyne, De Bruyne's creativity, if you like, in the aggregate. Because nobody, like Pep said, you can't copy and paste, right? Nobody's got his ability to do what he does. So you need to find systems and combinations that replicate it, if you like. And I think they've landed on one here that can certainly work in a lot of games against different opponents.
Yeah. That brings us in a roundabout way to Doku, Chris. What did you make of his debut? How do you think he did?
I thought he played well, considering it is a debut. It's not easy to come into a team, especially a high-achieving team, and you're trying to, you know, prove that you're at that level. You're getting used to your teammates, your surroundings. It's obviously a settling in period, but you don't get much time to... Well, I mean... Obviously, a lot of people say it takes a year to settle into a Pep team. I don't think you've got that as a winger necessarily. He needs to show that he's effective and that he knows the system and understands the way we play pretty sharpish. And I think by and by he did that.
Were you surprised that he was thrown in that case, given that? I mean, at this stage, given that Guardiola's had surgery, I don't know if they've met yet.
Mm. Good question. I should know that. Sorry.
All right, I was asking Chris. Question. You can think about it.
Well, just display my
I shouldn't even know that. So why are you asking that? Well, it is a good question whether they've met or not. But am I surprised to see him thrown in? Not really. None of our team selections surprise me, especially the surprising ones, because that's just the nature of the beast, isn't it? I was pleased to see him thrown in, and you know, in many ways, it's a perfect way to be thrown in. It's your debut at home. It's against Fulham. There's it's kind of, although it's an important 3 points like every other, it's kind of like the least pressure scenario that the Premier League's going to throw at you. I mean, if he didn't do well, you could take him off for a bit and bed him in again. But I thought he did well. Did you think he did well?
I'll let Mark answer that.
Oh, whether you thought he did well, no. I'll answer that.
No, whether you thought he did well. No,
do you
no,
think
no,
I think he David thinks he played well?
I think David thinks he played badly. Or not that badly, but poorly.
I don't think he played that well, but I thought he did all right.
Badly's a bit strong, so yeah. Badly is strong. Yeah, David thinks that he didn't play that well. I thought he played...
Well, I didn't play at all.
No, you didn't play. No, right. But,
I think playing not that well on your debut is playing quite well.
That's
because you didn't play badly.
Yeah, that's a point well made.
Thanks.
But okay, right. Sorry, I feel like
am I having a fever dream?
I think my brain's dripping out my ear now.
I think it's drinks break time, isn't it?
Is that sweat or brain fluid on the desk?
Look, I thought he played literally as expected.
A winger.
Okay. Yeah. But, no, well, I think that, look.
So to borrow from another sport, it was par.
It was par, yeah. Yeah, that's a good, yeah, okay. Let's just get back on track. It was kind of par for what we expected, right? It was good. There was some good. There was some bad. I think people always look for positives with new signings, right? They're always looking to accentuate the positive. Everything that we knew about him coming into this was that, like, he's raw and he'll run at people. And he did that. But he's not a Pep winger, is he? And there's going to be a point where he's going to come to know that soul crushing sense of having to turn back inside and pass to Rodri or the centre half. You know, that is coming. He's going to go through that meat grinder. But yeah, he's like, I thought like it was everything that you expected from a player that we heard about, but at the same time, he's just not got that. He's not a City player yet, is he? And I think you could tell that there was some overhead.
I think that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's not a City player yet. Like there was one back pass where he actually did. I think the one time where he did turn and like play back to the centre halves, played it back to Aki, and totally missed him by a mile, and it went all the way through to Edison. And it's like, okay, you've not got this yet. But
is he new?
Yeah, exactly. But no, I think it's really because the whole when he was being named and obviously all the reporting around him signing, City didn't have to sign a guy that it really doesn't fit the template for a Guardiola winger. So there's still a reason why they signed him. They still got raw abilities that they wanted as a kind of plan B. But I think you saw that it's going to take some time just to adapt to his new surroundings. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes. I think that when I judged his performance, I looked at it and thought he was taking on his man too much. And I've been properly pet-washed here.
Well, I mean, he wants to impress, doesn't he? There were a few nice little flourishes with his signature little ways of that sort of, I don't know, there's probably a name for it. You know, you do that little flip one way and then the other with the same foot while you're still on... your left foot standing and you flip it left and right with your right foot.
Yeah,
and
I used to play against one who used to do that in five-a-side, like right in front of the goal. And every time they'd scored, it really pissed me off because I knew they were going to do it and I couldn't stop it. So that's a skill I don't possess. Yeah,
if you've got pace and you can pull that off, then you're away. Oh, by the way, have I made you aware of a potential new song for Doku?
Oh, God.
It's actually, ironically, courtesy of that terrace darling, Eddie Grant, who also supplied a tune for, you remember the Cole Palmer song? Give me goals, Cole Palmer, give me goals, yeah. Cole Palmer, give me goals. Andy Prem soon come. Well, there's another Eddie Grant song. Well, it's the only other one I know, Electric Avenue.
Yeah.
Which happens to fit quite nicely with... He's gonna destroy you. Is Jeremy Docking? Your defense is looking tired.
I like it.
He's gonna get past you. Is Jeremy Docking? He's taking City higher.
Oh my
God! He does that. Yeah. That bit's optional, but I just thought I'd share. You can edit that out if you want.
That is not getting edited out, mate. You're on record with that now.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's talk about a little bit further forward as well, Mark, because the start of the season's been a bit odd for Erling Haaland in that he's completely mirrored his goal start from last season. He scored two on the opening day, not in the next game, one in the game after that, and then a hat-trick after that, and he's done exactly the same this season. And I suppose it's good for him to get his eye back in with that penalty as well.
Yeah, that is so weird, isn't it? Like, that is replicant stuff. That is kind of Terminator-esque, just repeating the algorithm from last season.
Restarted him.
Just reboot. Yeah, look.
Have you watched Battlestar Galactica? Because the Cylons projected themselves in human form. So he may just be, and some of them didn't know that they were Cylons. Maybe he doesn't know he's a machine.
Maybe not, no. Though, but I've never watched Battlestar Galactica, so I'm afraid. if you could have seen me, you'd have just been shaking your head when you opened with that. But still, sorry.
Switch.
I was like, no. It's kind of like Lilo said afterwards, he didn't really play that well. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's remarkable how unremarkable Haaland hat-tricks are now. I think, like, he's got, I think I saw a stat that he's only played 39 Premier League games and there's only 7 players that have scored more or 8 players that have scored more hat-tricks. Like, this just happens now. It even happens without us taking, like, you know, it's the fourth item or whatever that we've discussed from this game.
Hat-trick merchant.
Just another boring hat-trick merchant. I feel like it's a cop out because we were saying this exactly this time last year. But what else is there to say about him?
Yeah.
I think he got his eye back in on the penalty. But is there ever really any doubt that he was going to miss one again? He's the best penalty taker on the side. Expect him to score every time he steps up. The finish for the third as well. I thought it would be. One that you'd talk about if it was any other player, but we've seen that from him several times where it's just first time and it's just so direct and straight into the corner. I think he can obviously improve. City can improve, but the fact that he's still banging in hat tricks while you can say that just goes to show everything that we already know about him, basically.
Yeah, it's sometimes nice that third goal, Chris, is sometimes nice, isn't it, to watch a player just hit it really hard.
Oh, he just absolutely slammed it, didn't he? Emphatic. And it was really good work from
Gomez.
Thank you. Yeah, really good work from Gomez. Really confident, good skill. To come in, wait impatiently and have that kind of approach play and awareness to set him up was really good to see as well. And again, we're talking about Haaland hat-trick and it's so dull and obvious that I end up talking about somebody else instead.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about him in the context of somebody else as well, Chris, because Julian Alvarez has been playing alongside him a lot more this season. Whether or not that's in the absence of De Bruyne, or whether or not that was, it's been an intentional thing to kind of create a little bit of a partnership between the two of them. How do you think they link up together?
Really well. They seem to be a good foil for one another. I mean, on the face of it, it looks like a classic big man, little man. Lump it up and the nippy one will go through, but they obviously have got far more to their dynamic together. They're both, well, Haaland's increasingly better at holding the ball up, it seems, as time goes on. Alvarez drops deep well, and his link-up play is pretty decent. And it's great to see that we've got a way to play them both in the team at the same time, because when you've just won the World Cup, you want to be being played. Otherwise, you feel like you're just festering on the bench and you deserve it. And if you're Erling Haaland, you need to be playing because you're Erling Haaland.
Yeah. Dom Farrell picked up on a point. I don't know. And like I said, I don't want to say that Guardiola's stealing ideas here. But if you replace Haaland with Gota and Alvarez with Dickhoff, and then the left winger with Kennedy, you've basically got how City set up in 1999-2000.
Well, it's clearly a... It's clearly taken from the Joe Royal blueprint, hasn't it?
Yeah. Can you see a bit of a change of structure maybe, though, Mark, to be able to get these two in more often over the course of the season? Because as Chris says, you can't, like, ultimately Haaland is the first choice, and you can't just have another season where Alvarez gets a bit of game time here and there when Haaland can't play, because he is a World Cup winner. He's going to want more than that.
Yeah, you're right about that. But then it's just what we were discussing before about when De Bruyne is back, I think. And it becomes, you know, you're struggling to pick a place for every player that deserves to play. I mean, can you play Haaland, De Bruyne, Alvarez and Foden in the same side? I think the evidence of last season was that Pep was always really reluctant to do that.
Yeah, but imagine if he did.
Imagine if he did. Imagine if he just let us have fun for once in a while. God, this guy. Right. Yeah. No, I could see it. I can see it, but I think it comes at the expense of one of those other two in terms of De Bruyne and Foden. So, look, I don't know. Obviously, the partnership is working really well. And I know, obviously, our friend Sam Lee's written about this week as well. I was reading this piece about from the game. I think he did it on Haaland and Alvarez. And you know, Alvarez offers a lot more than Haaland does in terms of link-up play, in terms of out of possession, whatever. He's bringing more to the game and more to the team than just pure goals. But... He's perhaps still not bringing as much as the other eight outfielders are, if you know what I mean. If we think about City as a team that was basically 10 midfielders and a goalkeeper a few seasons ago, and then Haaland joined.
Sorry to interrupt, Mark. He does get slated for going missing, doesn't he, Alvarez? Just following Twitter.
Yeah, and I can see it, really. I think doesn't always really have... You know, if we're taking him, and I know we said that there's no real replacement for De Bruyne, but if we're taking him as the guy that's coming to the team when De Bruyne is out and they're trying to foster that relationship with Haaland that De Bruyne has, it just isn't always there and it isn't always as reliable. And I know that sounds daft saying it after a game where they've scored four goals. I think they've set each other up and, you know, but like, again, I kind of agreed with some of the perspectives that they just didn't really play that well, either of them, you would say, even though they were really effective. So I think it's still a partnership that needs a bit of time and needs a bit of work. But and Pep said that in the past, he's been reluctant to play them together up until about the spring, really, wasn't it? So I think it just needs a bit of time and a bit of work. But it's an option. It's just how it all shakes out and all comes together.
Yeah. Now, let's finish the first part of the show with a quick look at that second goal, because Fulham were unhappy about City's second goal. Mark, have they got a case?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what you think.
I think it's cut and dry, to be honest, mate.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? It's like, I did see some, basically everybody said, yeah, it's offside. Like in terms of social media, City fans I follow, stuff like that. It reminded me a lot of the Bruno Rashford one at Old Trafford last season, and that any layman and, you know, common sense, I think, dictates that that is offside, and anyone would say that. And it's interesting that they've been doing that. Match officials mic'd up. Have you seen this with Howard Webb explaining the decisions? And he said that it shouldn't have stood either. And you listen back to the actual conversation that the VAR team had, and it's have you listened to that stuff? Have you watched some of these? It's crazy, isn't it? How the referees just shouted, wait, over the top of it. You've kind of got to ignore him because he's obviously talking to all the players. He's like, shut up, we're looking at it, or whatever. And they've got to make a decision while having that in their ear. It's actually maybe respect the fact that it's quite hard, you know, and you can see how mistakes happen when, you know, they're not just sat back in a nice chill booth with some ambient music on trying to figure out whether someone's handballed it or if their shoulder's offside or whatever. It's actually quite difficult. There's a lot going on and a lot of pressure.
Maybe that's what's needed in the VAR protocol.
Maybe just
pack some Vivaldi into to stop the park.
So I can understand how they get things wrong, but that is one that I just think anyone looks at and says, yeah, that's offside. Because Leno definitely is anticipating either for the ball to hit Akanji or for Akanji to move out of the way. And I, you know, it just affects him, doesn't it? So offside from my opinion.
The law doesn't differentiate about whether a goalkeeper would or wouldn't have been able to make a save in terms of their ability, just whether it impacts their decision. Akanji becomes active if he clearly attempts to play the ball, which is close, when this action impacts on an opponent, or makes an obvious action which clearly impacts on the ability of an opponent to play the ball. And you could argue he did both. So
It's like, you know, some people interpret the Bible literally. Like they think the world was created in 7 days. Oh, well, 6 days, and then he took a day off or whatever. Like, it's like that, isn't it? You can read the law one way and sure, but the interpretation of it, we all know football by now, and we all know from my opinion, that was offside. I don't know.
Yeah. It's perfectly okay as well, Chris, to say it was offside, because just like all the, you know, all the United fans that I was speaking to at work last year, who would not admit that the Bruno Fernandes goal shouldn't have stood. And I had to say to them, listen, lads, the game's finished. Like, they're not going to take the win away from you. You can say it's offside.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Maybe if God hadn't have taken that day off and he could have sorted the offside rule out, with the world would be a better place. But I think Marco Silva was saying after the game, or at least his interpreter was, that it's one of these examples that shows the people making these decisions aren't football people. Because I'm looking at that, and I'm by no means an experienced goalkeeper, but I've played football enough and I've been in net enough to be looking at that and be able to put myself in the position of the goalkeeper and think, well, if that's happening to me, he's in the way, you can see him kind of stall, it's affecting his ability to play the ball as a keeper, because it's his thought process has been kind of juddered by what's happening in front. It's just fucking obvious. Like, what? How are you? Maybe you need, it's even more over complicated, but a football person, like, I mean, you shouldn't have to have that, should you? Somebody actually knows about football advising the VAR crew. It's just
proper
insane.
Football,
it's just, well, yeah, but like, I mean, how do you qualify to do that job? Surely some semblance of football experience that will give you more of a baseline knowledge to work from, because the dearth of common sense that has gone into that decision is just unfathomable, really.
Yeah, and I think the thing for me is ultimately that, yeah, we got away with it this time, but next time, you know, we concede one like that, we hit the roof. So it goes both ways. Now, the transfer window is closed, and we know what Manchester City's squad will look like until January at the very least. Sam Roscoe has been taking a look at the business done this summer.
It was the potential outgoings that seemed to be one of the bigger issues for City in the summer transfer window. In the end, 5 players left from the first team squad, but it could have been more. Ilkay Gundogan was the first to go after his contract expired. At his unveiling in Barcelona, he explained how he told Guardiola that he'd be moving on.
It was on the phone, it was a phone call, we were both on holiday already. But for me it was important that he is the first one to get the information from me directly. I just took my phone and rang him and explained to him everything, expressed my appreciation towards him, towards what the club has done for me in the last 7 years. And of course, he took it in kind of a sad way. But on the other side, I guess, this is my interpretation a little bit, that he was maybe also a little bit happy that I'm joining his childhood club. So he just wished me and my family all the best for the future.
That move was a few days after City had bolstered their ranks with the signing of Mateo Kovacic from Chelsea. He told City TV why he joined.
I'm joining the current Champions League winners, Premier League winners. So it's an amazing team with amazing players, a great coach. And you can see from the first impressions when I came here that it's a huge, a big club, and it's really a pleasure to be part of it. Always when I watch City, it's a pleasure to watch them, how they play, and it's so tough to play against them. It's probably the worst opponent to play against, because amazing skills on the balls and on the ball, and how they play, it's just beautiful to watch, and I'm now a part of it.
And one in, one out was how it stayed for a while. It was another month before anything concrete happened, when Riyad Mahrez left for Saudi Arabia at the end of July. The winger didn't feature in several key games at the end of last season, and it seemed the writing was on the wall at that point. Here's Pep Guardiola speaking after Mahrez's hat-trick in the FA Cup semi-final.
Always is grumpy with me when he doesn't play. He make me notice how grumpy he feels. Riyad loves to play football. He's a big fan. He's an amateur spirit. Like, it's not a guy, I have a contract, I have to do my job, I come here, how many hours I have to train, how many games I have to play, do my job, I go home. It's completely the opposite. And that's why when he's upset, don't play, because he wanna play. I understand completely. I know I lost the battle to make him understand how important is the group and everything. So, yeah, important is when he plays, play in that level. And when that's happened, everything is fine.
After Mahrez's departure, the window continued at a very slow pace for City. After some intense negotiations, they got the deal done to bring in Josko Gvardiol from RB Leipzig. He explained why he decided to move to Manchester.
It's just simple, you know, especially after the perfect season, I would say, last season. I decided to join you and to become one of you, to learn from the best and, of course, to be coached by the best coach in the world.
He, like Kovacic, also explained what it was like playing against City, and why that was a factor in his move.
To be honest, everyone wanted to, last season, to avoid you. It was just unbelievable the way they play at home and the atmosphere, also the calmness on the ball. It was just a different level, and I said a couple of times that you guys deserve it, and happy for you.
The transfer was confirmed in early August, about a week before the Premier League season would kick off. It went quiet again for a few weeks, until news broke that Aymeric Laporte had moved to Al Nassr on the same day that Jeremy Doku joined from Rennes. He was asked what he'd bring to City.
As a footballer, yeah, I'm quick, I'm strong, like to dribble, technique. I think the way I dribble, my speed, those are things that I can add to the group. Of course, the group is already a top group with a lot of top players, but I think that I can add that to the group.
That was on the 24th of August, and it got busier still, because one long-running transfer saga got a conclusion that day too. Bernardo Silva signed a contract extension.
It's been wanting to keep winning, because I'm going for my seventh season at City, and since I arrived, I just remember one season where we weren't successful, so to be here until now meant trophies, meant winning a lot, and I like to win. It's good to win. It's not easy. So to be in a winning team, it's a very good feeling, and I wanted to keep it that way.
Reports suggest that Bernardo's extension includes a formal buyout clause after years of him wanting to move on. But at least it put an end to the speculation about his future for now. Another who almost left was Kyle Walker. He told reporters in the Mix Zone after Saturday's win over Fulham that a transfer to Bayern Munich had been very much on the cards.
In the back of my head, it was always, I wanted to, you know, play for Manchester City, but I had to do what was right for, you know, for me, for my my future, and that was just whichever club gave me, you know, the most years, because I still think I've got a lot of life in the legs, and I wanted to continue playing football.
How close were you?
It was close, but in football, things can happen. Things can happen, decisions can be made, things can turn, and it wasn't meant to be.
There was still time for more business on deadline day two. First, Mateus Nunes joined from Wolves.
It's a dream come true. I always wanted to play for a big club in England. Being the champions, of course, I mean, it's amazing for me to everything to come here. The coach as well. I mean, it's a huge club. It has a lot of, the best you can get, the best opportunities, the best structure. So I think there's a lot of factors that influenced my decision to come here. I think it was an easy one. When I first found out that they were interested in me, I didn't think twice.
Later that afternoon, City's business was finished with the sale of Cole Palmer to Chelsea for £42.5 million and the loan of João Cancelo to Barcelona. Opinion is split over whether it's been a good summer or not. Targets like Jude Bellingham or Declan Rice moved to other clubs, some experienced players chose to leave, and many of City's deal took a long time to be completed. That said, four wins from the first four games, you can't argue with how well a team has started the season on the pitch. We'll see over the next few months how the new look squad handles fighting on all fronts this time round.
Hi, this is Andy Morrison, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
That was Sam Roscoe taking a look at City's transfer window. Chris, for you, how do you think the window's gone? Are you okay with where the squad is at? Do you think it looks a bit light, needs a bit more? What's your gut instinct?
Well, he likes a small squad. We've certainly got one. Not helped in the least by the demise of Kev. So, yeah, on the one hand, I'm pleased with the signings. I like them. You know, they make me feel positive. But on the other hand, yeah, we're still wafer thin, aren't we? Another couple of key injuries, and we're going to be up against it.
What I would say to that is obviously on a raw numbers level, it's five players out, four in. Gundogan, Mahrez, Laporte, Palmer, Cancelo out, and Kovacic, Guardiola, Doku, Nunes in. Cancelo, Laporte, Palmer weren't really playing last season, so it's effectively two players out, four players in.
Wow, I like the way you do maths, man. that's pretty cool. When you put it like that.
So in actual terms, he may have a smaller squad, but in real terms, he's got a bigger squad. I don't know.
Oh, I know. I do get what you meant.
I wasn't suggesting that you didn't. I wasn't saying,
let me run it by you one more time. No, yeah.
it's a positive.
So that five out
feeling
becomes
that I get from
like just two out because of the. You see what I mean?
Oh. You're starting to sound like Todd Bowley with the amortization stuff now. Like, this yeah. isn't how numbers work. Like, they're five are out and four are in. Okay, that's
you don't understand,
facts.
Man. Is on a 17 season contract.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I do get it, and yeah, no, I'm
let me just underline it for you, just so that you absolutely get it.
Let me just clean that window. No, I like it. I like the players we've got. I've always liked Kovacic, and he's impressed me more than I thought he would. Although, you know, everyone's a bit sloppy in that first half against Fulham. I think his ball playing was something that, like his, you know, his final ball into the box was something that I'd seen a few Chelsea fans sort of go off a bit, saying, "Oh, yeah, you wait, he's no good at this. You won't like it because of this." Actually, I've been really impressed with him. Doku, I think there's more to come. And Nunez, I must admit, Nunez, I don't know much about, but I know he was really good at running through United. I don't know whether that's much of a benchmark.
That might just be United, though. Let's not read too much into that one go.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. I can explain that again if you want. I mean, do you know much about him? I don't know how excited I should be, but I mean, in answer to your question, I'm pleased. But tell me more about Nunez, anyone, if they can.
Yeah, well, I can't. Can you, Mark?
Well, I think I remember the first time I came across him was after. Do you remember the Sporting Club de Portugal, to give them their proper title?
Club
in the last 16, was it the season before last? And we were sat down. I did that away actually, and we were sat down in the press conference, just waiting for Guardiola to come in. And then obviously it starts popping up this quote that he'd done pitch side to TV or whatever, that, you know, Matheus Nunes is one of the best players in the world. And I was like, the fuck is he talking about now? You know, like, who is this guy? And I, you know, clearly, I'm just really ignorant because I'd actually watched him for 90 minutes and hadn't noticed him or even really
still hadn't heard of him.
Taken his name in. But look, clearly, like, Guardiola's a big fan. I know he dishes out praise a lot, but, you know, that's pretty high praise. So he must think he's all right, at least. Yeah. And look, for Wolves, having seen bits of him for Wolves, he has got that ability to kind of drive through the midfield to carry the ball. It's kind of, I think it marks a bit of a change, really, in, you know, Guardiola's always on about dribbling and how much he loves dribbling, and it's the first thing he always asks when a player, you know, when the club brings a player to him, is can they dribble? You can see that with Doku. I think you can see that with Nunez as well, who do that.
Can they dribble? Because we need to stop them doing that.
Yeah.
Can they pass inside?
Can they pass inside? Yeah. It is a bit of a contradiction, but apparently that is what he asks. Yeah. So that probably is the follow-up, actually. I think, look, the big question is whether we can kind of take the burden off Rodri, right? Because the Phillips signing just absolutely hasn't done that for whatever reason. So, I think he can. I think that he'll be able to play that position, but he'll probably play it in a slightly different way. And it might mean that, yeah, City's set up slightly differently, that they aren't always as possession focused, that sometimes it is more about running. But again, like I said before, you know, I'm sure they'll all go through the Guardiola, like, cookie cutter or whatever, and he'll conform to the system eventually. But look, he's a talented player. Liverpool are in for him as well. I don't think he was City's first choice. I think that's well documented, given the names that were being bandied around before that and all the circumstances that happened. But I think he's a guy that certainly fills a hole at the minute, and he's probably a bit better than that. Actually, that's probably a bit of a disservice as well. So looking forward to seeing him start. Yeah.
And first choices don't really mean anything, because Diaz was comfortably not City's first choice, and yet look, he's turned into one of the best defenders in the league.
Yeah,
that was Haaland, really.
Yeah, he worked Kane, didn't he? Yeah. Chris, on the outgoings front, are you disappointed to lose Cole Palmer, or was he in reality just not going to get any more opportunities this season than in previous years?
Well, if you look at it another way, it's one Eddie Grant song out and one Eddie Grant song in, so squad hasn't really changed in that respect. But seriously, I was genuinely disappointed to see him go, because it felt to me that he turned a bit of a corner at the start of the season in terms of his performance, his confidence, his decision making. I thought he looked the player that we were hoping he had been, because he, I don't know, flattered to deceive is doing him a bit of a disservice, but he just wasn't really cutting it in a way that suggested he was going to definitely make it at City. And when that started to change, oh, he's off. He's like, oh, okay. And now we're hearing stuff coming out about, and I don't know how true this is, but he's apparently made some demands of Pep. Whether that, I don't think that generally would go down too well, unless it's a perfectly reasonable request rather than demand. Like,
sorry, I just suddenly had, like, the reasonable request of like, could you get off my foot, please, mate? You stood on my foot. Could you stand off my foot?
Yeah, that's my lunch. What are you doing? But yeah, I was disappointed because I thought he was playing well. And again, he's a local lad. But I also heard another rumour, and I don't know how true this is either, because that's what rumours are, that as a United fan, he was kind of keen on angling for a move to Old Trafford. So I'd rather, if he was going to go, that he goes to Chelsea than there and do well. But it just seems like a mad place to go to expect more first-team football. They've got like 11 players in that position or something. Mm-hmm. And it's this completely new team, club, city, language. I just don't know. I don't know. I wish him all the best, apart from he plays us, obviously. But I don't know. It'd be interesting one to see how he does. Yeah. If he is talented enough then, and he makes it there, then fair play to him.
We all know that Prem soon come is happening at the Etihad, don't we?
Yeah, probably.
That,
is, yeah.
That just has to happen. Yeah. That's how it goes down.
When do we play him?
Very good question. No idea. Let you do that live. Mark, is there a perception, do you think, that... because I've seen a lot of people not really be able to decide whether this has been a good window or a bad window. And is that down to, ultimately, how long it took City to get some deals over the line? Some of them, like Nunes to an extent, but Guardiola definitely, were pretty cut and dry. They were only going to, like, if those players were going to move, they were only coming to City. But obviously, like, the kind of the attitude of just get it done. And it didn't happen that way. Or is there also this perception that it's been a bad window because they were after targets like Declan Rice, like Jude Bellingham, and they've gone elsewhere?
Yeah, interesting. I think it's been a window that has been like not other really in recent years for City, because of just how things have had to change because of events, really. Like, I don't think when we were previewing the window back in May, obviously Saudi Arabia wasn't really a factor. And yeah. Then I know in the end it's only Mahrez and Laporte that have left for that. And look, I don't think Laporte was a surprise. I think Mahrez may be more of a surprise, but then at the same time, you know, it's no great skin off anyone's nose. I don't think. I think people understood that it was going to happen when it happened. But I think that element of it is just maybe, you know, because City is usually so well prepared and well planned, and business is done early, and it's the right targets, and like you say, things are cut and dry because we know which players they're going for, and they tend to get them done and they aren't moving anywhere else. It has been a bit different this year. I think it is really down to those factors. I think the Rice thing, what you hear, never really sure just exactly how committed they were to that. And I think that was ultimately borne out in how, you know, there was a bid, and then once it got to a certain point, they were ready to walk away. And to be fair, I think that's one thing that City are actually quite good at, is that if for any reason they feel like they're not getting a good deal, or if they feel that like players not absolutely committed and exclusively for them, they will walk away from that. And yeah, maybe I guess in the case of Rice and Bellingham, certainly those players had other options on the table that they were willing to listen to, and so City were like, okay, for us, not for us then. So it's been different in that regard. But I honestly don't think it's that much of a criticism. Like, Chicky or whoever deserves a lot of criticism for the way that this has gone, or even that it's really been a bad window.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I framed that question as if it's been a bad window, yeah. And we just don't know that yet.
No, exactly. You can't tell that. And it's a bit daft, isn't it, when everyone's at this time of year is like, yeah, I think that's a 7 out of 10. I think that's an 8 out of 10 or whatever. We haven't seen the players play yet. You know, nobody knows. So let's... all right. So let's just see how it shakes out, I think. I think, look, they ultimately got business done. I think the squad is a little bit light. I do think that I understand that it's quality over quantity, but I think that maybe some of that quality has been lost slightly. But that's going to happen because it's actually a bit of it's been a bit of a rebuild by stealth, hasn't it? Like, Doku's 21, Gvardiol's 21. The squad last year, I think it was like the sixth oldest in the Premier League. And they've needed to do that for a while. And we've just seen that happen. And if this, you know, if rebuilds are often quite painful, and if the pain of this one was, we didn't quite, you know, it took a bit longer than we liked, or there was a little bit of uncertainty in the middle over this target or that target, well, there's a small price to pay. So I think overall, it's been a fairly decent window, to be honest.
Yeah. On the kind of size of it front as well, I guess it'll fit, the squad will feel a bit fuller when De Bruyne and Stones are back.
Yeah, I think Stones back would help Akanji stop going into midfield, and I know there's been a few mixed reviews about that one. So that helps. And again, like we said before, I think De Bruyne, when he comes back, that'll unlock a load of different options with new players and new combinations. So it'll feel fuller. I take the point about Cancelo didn't play and became irrelevant. Absolutely. Laporte didn't play. That's true as well. I do think City were fairly fortunate with injuries last season, and all it takes, you know, we've seen that happen at the start of the season. If it happens in a couple of other positions, different positions, or several at one time in one position, then I think the squad would be a little bit stretched then. And you're starting to maybe rely on players that aren't as experienced and don't have that seniority and haven't won trophy after trophy over the last few years. That's the risk, I think, going in with this squad. Yeah. But no, I think overall it's in a good place, and it'll feel like a better place when those players come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's finish with a few questions from the listeners. Get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast if you want to send yours in. You can email as well. Just go to the website, bluemoonpodcast.com, fill in the form there. We start with Ben Warrender on Twitter, who says, if a Saudi club offer $150 million for Kevin De Bruyne next summer, do you think City would accept the offer? If you were making the decisions for City, would you accept the offer? Chris, what do you reckon?
Well, he's 32 now. He's shown a bit of wear and tear. We do tend to do all right without him.
$150 million is a lot of money.
We can't expect him to replicate his top form for very much longer. So we're talking about when he's 33, he will have missed most of a season. $150 million. I mean, there's a sort of head and heart answer, isn't there, to that? Head says, take it, because it's great business. We get some really good, fresh playing stuff. Heart says, oh, come on, it's Kevin De Bruyne. Don't sell Kevin. But if I was, you know, the club, then I probably would take that.
It's interesting that, the other side of this, Mark, is that De Bruyne would have to agree to go, because if De Bruyne is not interested in a move to Saudi Arabia, it doesn't matter what they offer. There's no there's no way he's taking the deal. But at the same time, it's almost that, like, if City were to get $150 million for Kevin De Bruyne next summer, we'd all be sitting here going, why aren't they spending the $150 million that they've got?
Yeah,
because they just wouldn't do it, would they? They would just go out and buy their usual targets at like 60 or 70 million and make three transfers.
I don't know. They'd have to replace him, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they? Especially if 150 million was on the table. I just don't know how you'd do it, though, to be fair. So, I don't think it's really, I don't know if it's even possible. I mentioned that copy and paste thing before. Within the squad, it's not really possible. How many players really do what De Bruyne does in world football? I don't know. Yeah, I think to be honest, if they got 150 million and it's there next summer, and I think that is a big question, actually, because, you know, one thing in the whole seller conversation has been, well, do you sell, do you not? It's about whether that money's there next year as well. Like, yeah. just taking Liverpool's perspective on that specific one. So that is a question, whether they'll still be throwing it around next year. I think they will, to be honest. I think there's a couple of years of this left. I would take it. I think you have to take it. I think for all the reasons Chris has just said, that like he's 32, he's, you know, the side copes well enough without him. City, you know, I tell you what, whenever they go on about like making sales from academy products, I mean, this would obviously, he's not an academy product, but it'd really help out the bank balance, wouldn't it? Like they'd be sorted in terms of FFP and whatever for a while. So yeah, I think you've got to take it, and replacing him would be difficult, but look, City's team usually get it right. I'm sure they'd latch onto someone, or again, like we're saying, recreated in the aggregate and find out a way of putting the system together to replace him. So I'd absolutely take it if it was offered, to be honest.
Yeah. Quick game of open the box, Chris, because if it's yes to 150 million, is it yes to 100 million?
In today's market, in terms of replacement for what he provides, you're probably going to need more than one player. 50 million... two players for 50, probably not. I don't know why I'm feeling so pressured. It's not my money. It's a completely theoretical situation, and I'm like, oh God, what would I do? No to that. And anyway, right. How ginger is Kev? He's not going to want to go live in Saudi. Why?
Yeah.
As a fellow day walker, I wouldn't do it. So,
yeah. Peter Collier on the email says, could the FA really be successful in convincing Guardiola to take over from Gareth Southgate? And does this worry that Guardiola's time at City is closer to an end than we might want to admit? What do you think the landscape looks like after Guardiola at City? Mark, first off, is that a possibility? Can you see Guardiola managing the England national team after Southgate?
I think, yeah, always the big question with Guardiola is, where would he go next, right? Like, what would he actually do? Like, because I don't see him going to PSG or whatever. I don't see him going really to Italy. I know he hasn't done anything there, but I just don't see what club would really coax him over there. He's obviously achieved everything that he could do in Spain with Barcelona, so that's off. I think it is probably international management. And I think there's always been the suggestion that he likes Brazil, Argentina, that sort of thing. Don't think he'd do Spain, given his, you know, loyalty to Catalonia, whatever. Maybe he would, I don't know. I just don't really see it with England, to be honest. And I think, whereas I'm not saying for one second that the FA would turn up their nose at him, but the path that they've taken with going for English coaches has been pretty clear over the past, you know, I think they've done their kind of dalliance with foreign coaches. So I'm sure they'd take him if he was up for it. And I'm sure, like, approach will probably be made at some point if possible. But I just don't really see it. I think he's going to have grander aspirations than that. So yeah. No.
He has, though, pretty much managed the England national team anyway, hasn't he, Chris, with some of the players that City have got. So does it matter? He's done it already. He doesn't need to leave.
I don't think he'd go to England. I think is he too Catalan to manage Spain?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
Catalonia. Those guys. Catalonia. Those guys have their own national team anyway. Maybe we could go there and you know, see how you get on without your big checkbook.
What do you think City looks like without him, Chris? And do you think that point is coming sooner rather than later these days, given how long he's been here?
Well, I think it looks like the Etihad on Saturday.
Great point.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
He wasn't there, was he?
He wasn't there, true. You're right, yeah.
Yeah. So it looks...
own petard, though. Well,
it looks... He has a presence and a well-earned reputation and a... You know, it would be a weaker place with him not there, but a stronger place, even if he isn't there, for him having been there and set the foundations that he has for whoever comes in afterwards to hopefully carry on, whether that's Vincent Kompany or someone else, I don't know. But yeah, hopefully these traditions that he's put in place will continue long after he's gone.
imagine if City just went the complete opposite way and got you know, a long ball merchant in just to mix it up a bit, see what happens.
But Allardyce.
Yeah.
Yeah. He might stay around so long that actually comes back into fashion. Like, yeah, he gets left behind by whatever, like, long ball 2.0, and yeah, actually that's the way to play football now. So that's always a possibility.
Get Tony Pulis in, see what happens. Final question then for this week comes from Adam on Twitter, who says, did you see that John Stones made posters for his bid for captaincy with the slogan, John Stones, man of the people? What slogans would be good for City captains of the past? Have we got any ideas here? Mark, anything?
Yeah, I came up with one for Andy Morrison.
I had one for Andy Morrison.
Oh, sorry. This will be good then.
Be the same one. I bet they're going to be the same. Shall I do it? Mine was more reasons to captain Morrison, like the supermarket jingle.
That's nice. No, mine was different. It was just, I will lick you into shape.
Oh, I like that.
He got sent off for licking someone's nose, didn't he?
Stan Collymore's nose, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, who wins then, David?
I like them both, but you wouldn't know this, Mark, but I'm not a huge fan of puns, so I'm gonna fall on Chris's side, I'm afraid.
What the fuck, man?
You surprised me. Yes.
Okay. All right. I had one for Richard Dunn as well, which wasn't as good, but it was just get it done. Richard Dunn.
And having just said that I don't like puns, I quite like that. So there we go.
Oh, you like that one better?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Christ.
What about by the book, Tony Book?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, throw the book at
throw
the book at me. No, you won't want that.
No, you won't want that. No, that's the right. You definitely don't want that, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Right. Well, if you've got any better suggestions, do get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. And that's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks to my guests for this one. Chris Higginbottom.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Mark Critchley.
Thanks. The Morrison's pun was good. I think the Morrison's pun was good.
We'll see what the audience thinks. We'll see what the audience thinks when they hear it. We'll be back after the international break to look ahead to the game with West Ham. So I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I was the first woman to read the classified football results on British National Radio. And that was at the time when I was having to read results out of City losing to York City and Mansfield, Lincoln. So I kept wanting to change the results. So
they don't like it when you do that, do they?
No, people were saying, oh, what a wonderful legacy to have that. And I'm going, well, no, it was really, really hard because I kept having to read out these results that were, I wanted to edit. I still feel coming home from beating United, having watched the Champions League, you know, the feeling of winning the treble, I still can't believe it. I still think I'm going to wake up and Peter Swales is still in charge. But yeah. I'm enjoying it. Don't get me wrong. I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. But I still remember those days, the relegation battles, sitting on the edge of your seat at Main Road, or the queues for the toilet because there was only one lady's toilet.
Yeah.
I still really miss Main Road.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
After some intense negotiations, they got the deal done to bring in Josko Gvardiol. Gvardiol. Gvardiola. Why have you done this to me? After some intense negotiations, they got the deal done to bring in Josko Gvardiola from RB Leipzig. After some intense negotiations, they got the deal done to bring in Josko... Josko... Josco, yeah, it is. Josok? No, Josco. After some intense negotiations, they got the deal done to bring in Josco Gvardiol from RB Leipzig.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Switching between different tools to finish a project can feel stressful and disjointed, especially while juggling tight deadlines in a fast-paced work environment. Now, there's a better way. Grammarly built a writing service that's a game changer for professionals. It helps move your ideas forward and sharpen your words for better results, all in one place. With Grammarly's AI agents, you get writing support at every step to bring polish and impact to your emails, reports, and proposals without the tab overload. Email sounds robotic, phrasing feels off, writing for a high-stakes client, Grammarly's got you covered. You can even ask Grammarly's AI chat to help brainstorm brilliant proposals, summarize meeting notes in seconds, or even shape a winning sales strategy, all right from your doc. 93% of professionals say that Grammarly helps them get more done. Now, it's your turn. Sign up for free and get stronger results. Faster work, smarter sentences, clearer finishes. Visit Grammarly.com to get started. That's Grammarly.com.